Everyone needs a pastor. A visit to the Pastor's Study brings biblically faithful pastoral ministry to you and pastoral ministry from those with proven experience in Christian service. Our time together will be lively, sometimes controversial, always useful, and never dull. Welcome to the study of Pastor Bill Shishko.
Pastor Bill Shishko here with you. Hey, it's great to have you with us for another visit to the Pastor's Study. The writer of the Bible, book of Hebrews, in chapter 2 and verse 15, tells us, darkly but honestly, that all human beings, since the fall of our first parents, are, through fear of death, subject to slavery all their lifetime. And the fear of death comes sometimes in mockery. The utterly irreverent 1960s song by Blood, Sweat, and Tears, "When I Die," mocks death. "I'm not scared of dying, and I don't really care. If it's peace you find in dying, well, then let the time be near. Just bundle up my coffin, because it's cold way down there. I hear it's cold way down there. Yeah, crazy cold way down there. Here I go. Oh, here comes the devil right behind. Look out, children. Here he come. Here he come." Mockery of death. Sometimes the fear of death comes in various ways of trying to avoid it. Death is spoken of with the prudishness that marked Victorian views of sexual intimacy. Everything is done by funeral directors, at great expense, of course, to make the deceased look natural. And there are now drive-in funeral homes where you can get a glimpse of the departed loved one by pressing a button, seeing the body in the casket under glass with careful illumination, and then drive on. In yet other cases, we use battle language to impress upon others that with our technology, medicine, alternative remedies, and human fortitude, we will wage war on our cancer, overcome aging, and get victory over the disease. As in war, we'll use every measure at whatever cost in an all-out effort to conquer the mortal enemy of death. And yet death eventually wins. Always. The resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead is meant to transform all of this. The same passage in Hebrews that speaks of people being subject to slavery all their lives because of the fear of death says, prior to that, Jesus Christ shared in our flesh and blood, that is, he was truly human as well as truly divine, so that through death he might destroy the one who has the power of death, that is, the devil, and deliver those who through fear of death were subject to lifelong slavery. Now, for the Christian, the one who is united to Jesus Christ in true faith, everything about his or her outlook on death is different, or at least it should be. Death as punishment has no ultimate power over the Christian. Death is a separation of the soul from the body, and while the body of a Christian, being still united to Christ, rests in the grave, the soul goes into paradise, the immediate presence of God, the unfallen angels, and the spirits of all the justified ones who preceded them. At the return of Christ, well, their bodies then shall be changed into incorruptible bodies and united with their incorruptible souls, and they shall enter into the glorified state of eternal life. O Lord, haste the day. Well, Christians ought to face death with the words of the soon-to-be-martyred Thomas More in T.S. Eliot's famous play Murder in the Cathedral. "I'm not in danger," he said, "only near to death." And yet, interestingly and quite curiously in my opinion, people of faith, including committed Christians, are often the ones least accepting of the inevitability of death. Whether through an extreme understanding of the Eighth Commandment's requirement to take all lawful attempts to preserve our own lives or the lives of our neighbors, or because of a genuine but misguided faith that God will always heal the sick if we pray hard enough or if we have enough faith, or by a sincere but blind effort to show care for our loved ones, people will unwittingly seek to prolong a life that should be relinquished to the loving hands of the God in whom we live and move and have our very being. Here's a beautiful example of a woman's Christian faith that transformed her view of facing death. It's from a book that I cannot too highly recommend, Pursuing Health in an Anxious Age by Dr. Bob Cutillo. Pursuing Health in an Anxious Age by Dr. Bob Cutillo, quoting from his book. Margaret had been a recent admission to Cook County Hospital for a cough and weight loss. As a resident in the hospital service at the largest public hospital in Chicago, I was responsible for the care of indigent patients sent up from the emergency room. I discussed the case with the team, ordered the usual tests, and by the third day knew that she had inoperable lung cancer. After consulting with oncology, I went to explain her diagnosis and treatment. Now, though aware of the grave prognosis, I was buoyed by the options for treatment and believed that I could instill hope into an otherwise despairing situation by carefully explaining her choices. When I arrived at her room, she seemed oblivious to what was coming. She happily showed off the braids in her hair that her granddaughter had done that morning and asked how I was doing, which was her usual custom. I sat down and told her that I had bad news. I plunged forward with the sad facts, quickly interjected the hopeful range of treatments available, and braced myself for her response. But I wasn't ready for what she said. She told me she had assumed something like this was what she had, and she thanked me for the careful evaluation of her problems, asked if she could continue the medicines that were helping her pain, and said that she was ready to go home. Of course, I was shocked at what I was sure was a bad decision. I even felt anger that she would reject the potent treatment we could give her. I told her bluntly that she would die soon if she went home and asked her to reconsider all that we could do for her. I even asked her to think about her family and how much they would miss her. And after listening carefully to each and everything I said, in the briefest words but firm and full of meaning, she said, "It's time for me to go home." She left the hospital and died in peace amidst the love of family 3 months later. How did this uneducated woman, who had lived most of her life picking cotton in rural Mississippi and was now sitting in a hospital bed in Chicago with metastatic lung cancer, know what time it was, though, about her advanced cancer? I looked at my own hope in treatment that could only extend her life a short time and perhaps with many complications, and I saw that she had a unique understanding of life forged through years of struggle and poverty that made her dependent on God. She knew something I didn't know. She was aware of time and sensitive to signs that I was not trained to see. Today's visit to the pastor's study will begin to explore end-of-life issues. The topic is delicate, but Christians should face them honestly, always in the light of the only real cure for death, the cross and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. I have two Christian medical doctors for my guest on today's program. Dr. Megan Gaffey currently serves as a senior pediatric ENT fellow at Arkansas Children's Hospital, and Dr. Michaela Eibach, assistant professor of clinical pediatrics in pediatric palliative care at the Monroe Carroll Jr. Children's Hospital at Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee. They met during their years at Rutgers, New Jersey Medical School, and today, well, they're going to help us work through just some of the challenges, and they are huge challenges of end-of-life issues. Now, remember that this program enables you to call in with your questions. Our live call-in number, hopefully you'll write it down and hopefully you'll use it, 631-955-5400. Again, for live call-in, 631-955-5400. Make a note of it. And you can also text your questions at this special number for Pastor Bill, 516-367-0391. Encourage you to text questions if you'd like, 516-367-0391. But for now, though, Dr. Megan Gaffey and Dr. Michaela Eibach, welcome to A Visit to the Pastor's Study. Welcome, Dr. Gaffey, and welcome also to you, Dr. Eibach.
Thank you, Pastor. It's good to be with you today.
And I appreciate you doctors taking your time to be with us. Let's get right into the deep waters of end-of-life issues. Give us some actual cases you've experienced in your medical practices. I'm not sure who's going first, Dr. Gaffey or Dr. Eibach.
I think Dr. Eibach will take this one first.
Okay, Dr. Eibach.
Yeah, thank you. And I do want to say, if it's okay with you, Pastor, before I give a case that I think exemplifies what we're talking about, how that I and I know Dr. Gaffey were coming at this issue with much prayer, much thought, much humility. I know we're only scratching the surface. of this topic that's probably difficult for a lot of your listeners. It might be painful. There might be guilt, a lot of curiosity. And I think our goal is not to open wounds or just be morbid for the sake of morbidity, but really to unite around the beauty of the gospel and live faithfully as our calling, in our calling as Christian physicians.
Exactly right.
We've both wrestled with these issues, and personally I've come to a lot of clarity that's been freeing around this topic, and that's really what I hope is helpful for your listeners today.
Great.
But so the case, I think, for me that exemplifies this is I took care of a young man who suffered the rupture of a brain aneurysm. It ultimately ended his life, but in the weeks before the aneurysm burst, so while he was still healthy, for whatever reason, it had come up in his house, and he told his family that he wouldn't want to live in a state of questionable consciousness on machines with a lot of medical interventions. So when it actually happened that he was at that point and his family was faced with that diagnosis, those very prognosis, and they were asked what his wishes were, even though they told me and the doctors taking care of them that if it was up to them, they would have preferred to medically intervene, they did end up honoring his wishes and allow him a natural death, and he succumbed to that brain aneurysm. So for me, that sort of ties, it brings out a lot of these issues.
The epitome of the things we're dealing with. Dr. Gaffey.
Mm-hmm. Personally, I'm a surgeon, so I'm often seen as a technician because I provide an intervention. And so a lot of the cases that I have had to deal with are me taking an action, a very clear and kind of finite action along a patient's timeline of care. So I have been asked to stop a hemorrhage in a patient who has, for example, a cancer that is not curable and eroding into large vascular structures, but to actively stop a hemorrhage. I've also taken care of a patient who was unable to be intubated, that's unable to have a breathing tube placed because of a very difficult airway, and had been getting sort of insufficient oxygen for several hours during the day, which led to already we knew a decrease in brain activity, although no tests could be done yet. But I was the person to secure that airway because I had the tools necessary in order to do that. So I did make that intervention. And there are many times where it's one of the things that my specialty does is place tracheostomy tubes. I'll probably be mentioning them again.
Your specialty is ear, nose, and throat.
Yes. Okay. Yes. And so we will place a breathing tube, diverting it from the patient's mouth, putting it directly into the patient's neck, which actually eases the use of mechanical ventilation or external breathing. And so I've done that countless times in patients that have very, very, very poor prognosis. So those are some
and
examples.
And you're obliged to do that when people want that done, correct?
Yes and no. Because I am considered a technician, a lot of times I am not wholly involved in the patient's care up until that point. So the patient's primary team that's managing all of the patient's medical issues will say, well, we've come to the decision and the family has decided or the patient has decided, if the patient is able to, that we're going to move forward with placing a tracheostomy tube. And they ask us. And it's only been, there have only been very, very few instances. I can think of one instance where we, as a team, refused because we knew that taking the patient to the operating room would mean that the patient would die in the operating room. And we did not want to be the hands that ended the patient's life when it would end naturally without us. And so that was one time. But for the most part, even if, and there have been a lot of times where I've come to the where I have looked at the patient and said, I'm not going to, I really wonder if I'm making this patient any better by doing this, but per the patient's wishes or the patient's family's wishes, I proceed in doing it.
You proceed in doing it. Let's back up a little bit, Dr. Ibach and Dr. Gaffey. Maybe break down these examples. What are some of the specific issues that rise out of cases like this, as you look at it from a medical perspective?
I think for me, I really wrestle with whether I'm hurting a patient sometimes. I want to know that the intervention that I'm providing is in some way going to help the patient, and going to, if the patient is on a road to recovery, I definitely feel better. But I don't want to be the physician that is treating a patient solely because of a patient's family wishes. Because we're, and I know we're going to talk a little bit more about ethics later, correct, but patients have a right to choose what medical care in they would like to receive, like the patient that Dr. Ibach just mentioned.
Right.
You have a right to choose that. There does come a point where a patient's requests may become morally, ethically, or even in our case, biblically not aligned with what we believe we want to do. And in that case, we are convicted to say no.
So can you give a specific, and then Dr. Ibach, I'm going to be interested in your example. Give a specific where a medical action you might take would conflict with your convictions as a Christian.
Well, I recently had a patient who patient who was a child, who had absolutely no awareness of what was going on because of devastating brain injury, and I was reluctant to place a tracheostomy tube because I knew that it would be an intervention that could hurt the patient, and it is a temporary pain, but it is a surgery that could hurt the patient. And I was.
You mean more than just the pain at the moment? It could do harm to the patient.
It is the pain at the moment, and then I also ask myself, what am I buying this patient by doing this treatment? And the reason that I was given over and over again was that mom could not bear to let her child go. And so, but my issue is that I am not operating on mom. I am operating on the child.
Dr. Ibach, perhaps you could add as well some issues that rise out of the cases like the one you presented.
Yeah, to me, Pastor, I think the main issues, I think at the 10,000 foot view, are really how should we use medical technology as Christians or just as people? But for Christians specifically, are these right or wrong issues, or are these wisdom issues? Specifically, then, how do we apply these to end-of-life situations? What's the goal of how we're using medical technology? Who gets to decide how we use medical technology? Does God obligate us to use medical interventions to prolong our own suffering? And then ultimately, I think, though, one of the hard lines I think I'm going to talk about a little later on, I'm sure will come up multiple times today, is the difference between active killing and allowing a natural death process to occur.
Yeah,
so to me, sort of, those are the big issues.
Yeah, after the break, I want to develop that one a bit. Let me, before the break, Dr. Ibach, Dr. Gaffey, don't we face, though, more and more situations in which people may want some kind of an intervention, but the resources for it are not available?
Yes, I believe so. In the past, when your life ended, it ended. Let's say centuries past, when your heart stopped, all your organs stopped.
Yeah.
All your organs would stop simultaneously. And God has given us this gift of medical advances and technology, where we can support one organ or another organ for a time. While the other organs,
and that may be quite a lengthy time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Correct. Okay.
Yes, we can. But when you think about it, we have these options because we're in the United States, and this is a medically advanced country.
And Americans expect,
yes,
that they're going to get these things.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, if we were in a rural area in a third world country, these ethical issues do not even arise.
Yep.
They're not options. And so death is faced very differently and is thought of in a completely different manner in other nations that yep, just do not have the resources that we have here. And so it's been a blessing in the sense that doctors can bridge patients to recovery. there can be a patient that has a very good prognosis but just needs to make it through the next such and such period being supported before they can get back to that recovery state. And that happens all the time, and we're very thankful for that yes. we can do that. But then the area becomes much more gray when we as medical professionals are looking at all the data in front of us and are not seeing an option or a possibility of recovery.
Okay, we're going to probably get to that. Dr. Ibach, did you want to add something to that? But we do want to discuss this issue of the difference between preserving life and prolonging death. But I'm wondering if you wanted to add to what Dr. Gaffey said.
Yeah, no, I agree overall with Dr. Gaffey. I think that no one is arguing that medical advances have been helpful overall for the world. And I think that medical equality or equity should exist, and that we should be seeking to bring these medical treatments to the rest of the world that doesn't have it.
Yes.
I think that's a justice issue, as we mentioned ethics.
Yes.
But the blessing of medicine has also brought us these dilemmas where of how we apply these medical interventions in sort of these extreme situations that we're talking about. And I think that is going to only get worse as time passes and we develop more medical technology.
Isn't it true with modern technology? You've got the benefits, you've got the pros and the cons. I remember mm-hmm. as I hear you ladies speak, years ago when I was in Uganda, shortly before we left to come back here, the pastor wanted me to meet a lady who with her family lived under a bridge. She did not have access to medical care, and she had, I imagine it was tuberculosis. And she knew that she was going to go home to be with the Lord, and that time that she had was time that she used to prepare her family and herself. And it was actually one of the most beautiful examples that I've seen of how a Christian should prepare. We're dealing with end-of-life issues. We're beginning to deal with a huge topic of end-of-life issues with my guests, Dr. Michaela Ibach and Dr. Megan Gaffey. And please avail yourself of the opportunity to call 631-955-5400 for your live calls to the program, 631-955-5400. Or if you're somewhat reluctant to actually be on the radio, you can text your question, 516-367-0391. Just put in Pastor Bill for it, 516-367-0391. We'll be back with today's edition of A Visit to the Pastor's Study after this message from the voice of the program.
That great city, New York. Metropolitan New York is the largest city in the United States. And with a population of over 20 million people, Metro New York is one of the largest cities in the world. And what's more, Metro New York is home to people from every nation of the world. To reach Metro New York is to reach the world. But churches faithful to historic Reformation Christianity in the Metro New York area are few and far between. The mission fields of Metro New York are America's richest and most neglected. Reformation Metro New York is an agency by which the Orthodox Presbyterian Church is planting and developing biblically faithful churches and church ministries in the Metro New York area. Through Reformation Metro New York, you can help promote the outreach of this program, A Visit to the Pastor's Study, and other projects designed to further the ongoing reformation of the church. That and church planting are the great passions of Reformation Metro New York. For more information, check out the website at reformationmetrony.org, where you'll get a personal look at the ministries of the churches, pastors, evangelists, and teachers of the Orthodox Presbyterian Church in the area, and you'll learn how you can be a part of our labors. We need your help. Here's the site again, reformationmetrony.org. Thanks for your interest and your help. Remember that great city, New York. To reach Metro New York is to reach the world. Now back to today's edition of A Visit to the Pastor's Study.
Pastor Bill Shishko here with you today. We're dealing with end-of-life issues. My two guests, Dr. Michaela Ibach and Dr. Megan Gaffey. And if you'd like to call in number for your questions, 631-955-5400, 631-955-5400. Write it down, or you can text your question too at 516-367-0391, 516-367-0391. 877-367-0391. Doctors Ibach and Gaffey, when I was in seminary last, that was the last century, okay, but medical ethics was discussed, and we were taught to distinguish between preserving life and prolonging death. That's still applicable? Is it superficial? Dr. Gaffey, how do you respond?
I think, so bluntly, I'll start by saying there are actions, I mentioned this earlier, that are requested of physicians which violate medical ethics and biblical principles. I know we're not delving into these today, but abortion and euthanasia are two of these, okay? Because that is asking a physician to take an action that would end a life. And Michaela was touching on this earlier, so I think I'm going to hand this off to her so that she can finish what she was saying.
Okay. Dr. Ibach.
Yeah, I agree. I do not think it's superficial.
You don't? Okay.
I think this is the world that we live in. We just mentioned before the break, you know, there's parts of the world even now and even 50 years ago that we wouldn't have had to make these decisions. But now I think this distinction is helpful. But I do want to be clear that I think we can all agree that killing is wrong. It's sin. It's not the way God intended the world to be. But I don't think that choosing not to use a medical intervention, even if it leads to the end of your earthly life, is wrong in the same way.
Yeah.
I think that's the distinction that a lot of Christians kind of can get stuck on right there.
That's very important, the way you put that, Dr. Ibach, choosing not to use a particular medical intervention. Yes,
yes, sir.
Exactly.
Even if it ends to your earthly life. Right. I don't think that that's wrong or anti-biblical, in fact. So either ethically or morally wrong. If it'd be helpful, I have a case of a prolonging of death, if that'd be helpful.
Sure,
to share.
Absolutely.
So I took care of a young woman who was clearly dying. She had a brain injury. A lot of these cases surround significant brain injuries. So there were a lot of medical interventions that were, for a time, extending or preserving her life. But then there came a point when it was clear that she was dying. There was really nothing that any of her medical team could do to stop that process. And at that point, I believe we were prolonging her death. Her family was unwilling to pull back on some of the medical interventions, and she ended up actually dying in spite of the medical intervention she was receiving.
Yeah.
But I think that in that situation, it was clear that she was dying. It was clear that she was in the last phases of death, and she was still, and so all of our machines, all of our medicines were only prolonging that process.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, some people want that. And I think here in the U.S., in the Western world, adults have the autonomy ethically to choose how they want to die. And I think some people might want to die with tubes down their throats or different medical procedures happening. But others want to die peacefully without medical intervention that isn't going to be helpful. And I think that those are the cases where it's helpful to distinguish between preserving life and prolonging death. I think it helps some people kind of wrap their mind around that.
Pastorally want to add at this point, having had to deal with many situations from a pastoral perspective, it's very important that people not make their decisions based on a sense of guilt that's either trying to make up for things they haven't done in the past or sometimes trying to make self-atonement for things they have done in the past and thinking they can make up from it. And pastorally, that dealing with those issues of false guilt and sometimes genuine guilt in relation to these is very important. Dr. Gaffey, did you want to add something?
I just wanted to say that as physicians, it's in our capacity and it's also our duty to allow patients to die comfortably. And I'm echoing what Dr. Ibach said in this. We want them to be able to die comfortably and with dignity and with as little pain as possible.
Now, isn't that part of the Hippocratic Oath that you take?
Yes, when we take the Hippocratic Oath, and that we take that before our first day of medical school. It's during a white coat ceremony. And we stand there and we take the Hippocratic Oath and we say that first we will do no harm to a patient.
Right.
And then we also say that we will not withhold a treatment if it could be for that patient's good. If we know that we will offer it, we offer it. Now, a patient has the right to decline
it. Right.
And that's what autonomy is, saying that you have the right to make your own decisions. And another medical ethic term that we throw around is capacity. Capacity means that you have the ability to make those decisions. So if you are a newborn baby, you do not have capacity.
Okay.
So once you have gained capacity.
Now, in that case, mm-hmm. though, that you defer to the parents.
You defer to the parents.
Okay.
Yes, you defer to the parents because the baby does not have capacity. Now, once an adult has capacity, then we have to allow them autonomy. As long as it is not violating what I mentioned earlier. For example, if an 18-year-old wants to have physician-assisted suicide or euthanasia, that varies by state whether it's legal or not. And that's not really what we're discussing today.
Correct.
But if it's in a state where it is legal, a physician is not obligated to perform that.
Okay. Very interesting. I have a call from Joe in New York. Joe, welcome to A Visit to the Pastor's Study.
Yes, thank you, Pastor. I appreciate it, taking my call. As a physician myself, I was interested when I heard the program, and I was wondering if the two panelists, the two other physicians, would comment on what they've seen or how they've seen other physicians, other peers treat individuals, especially with developmental disability, at their end of life. Unfortunately, I've seen physicians come into the practice and deal with these type of individuals from a cultural bias, unfortunately. Some of them feel they are not, they don't have a good quality of life, therefore that we shouldn't offer them continued care, possibly care that might sustain or extend their life, or even offer them a cure. So I just wanted to know if I'm the only one out there that has experienced that difficulty with other physicians.
Joe, just out of curiosity, what type of medicine do you practice?
I practice internal medicine. I'm one of the medical directors for New York State Developmental Disability Agency.
Okay, so the interest in particular in developmental disabilities. Dr. Gaffey, you want to... Thanks, Joe, for the call. Appreciate it.
Yes, and this is something that... So it's hard to say... I think sometimes what physicians wind up applying to their care of a patient is what would I want if this were me, and that's hard because you're trying to, as a physician, come up with what is good for the patient. And although we don't believe in complete moral relativism, it is true that a quality of life that is experienced by a patient that you believe you have a superior quality of life could still be appreciated by that patient. And I think that's where you have to take some of your personal bias out of it. If I believe that you have to, the bird's eye view, again, looking at the patient's prognosis and how much when you're weighing the risks and the benefits of a treatment that you are offering a patient, because again, we don't want to hurt someone.
Now, I think Dr. Joe's question had to do with the peers that you see. Mm-hmm. Do they share your approach to things, or do you find that with peers of different cultural backgrounds, they approach these things differently?
I personally can't say necessarily from a different cultural background, but I do know that it varies physician to physician.
Okay.
And it doesn't even necessarily vary specialty to specialty, because every specialty has its own culture. You know, a surgical subspecialty or a medical specialty has its own culture. But I would say that it varies on an individual basis, and some physicians are bringing a religious code to the table.
Okay.
And not all are. And
by that, you're obviously not talking about just a Christian.
Exactly. Can bring another religious background to the table. So that definitely does. I have seen it influence, but I can't say that I've seen a cultural construct with that. I don't know if Michaela has.
Yeah, Dr. Reibach is going to ask you the same question. Have you seen those differences among your peers or those with different religious backgrounds?
Yes. I'd echo what Dr. Gaffey said in that I think we bring our own bias to the table. I think no physician wants to harm or hurt their patients, but they often use their own definitions of what harm or hurt would be to them. And so if they are looking at a patient with neurocognitive disabilities or living a life that wouldn't seem like it would be have a good acceptable quality to them, then they would maybe project that onto their patients. And that's where I've seen that often, not only physicians, other providers, nurses. I think that influences a lot of how we look at patients, and I don't think that we should do that. I think we should have the ability to recognize within ourselves what we would want or what we would want for our loved ones, but then to be able to say that someone else might have different definitions of what quality of life of suffering might look like. And I also, I don't, as a Christian, I also don't think that suffering or disability, I think that suffering and disability can glorify God, even though they're not the way that He, I think, made the world. I think that how we respond to suffering, how we respond to the marginalized, to those who don't have the same abilities that we have, whether that's physical abilities, whether it's emotional, psychological, I think that how, if we respond as Christ did, and that's then we are being a witness to the world, and our hope is somewhere else. But that's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, Dr. Reibach, then. And I realize in discussing these things, I've got about 8 or 9 different programs I've thought of just in light of your responses. But I'm right then that when we're thinking of a primary care physician, a lingo we use now, we should, if you don't have someone who's particularly a Christian, we should try to have a primary care physician who is on pretty much on our wavelength ethically and morally, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yes. And I don't know. I think it's difficult to know that in the and on the offset when you pick a physician, because it isn't something that it's not posted on a health score.
Yeah.
It's not, you can't Google that. I mean, sometimes you can, but I think I mean, a relationship between a physician and a patient is extremely important.
Yeah.
It really is, and especially for physicians who are going to be taking very close care of patients.
Am I overstating the case to say that personal relationship with your surgeon, your physicians, that's not a small part of an aspect of our recovery, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Yes, studies have shown that has a very big influence on the way that patients perceive the care they've received.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from the physical medical care that they have received, patients will actually, if they have a good relationship with their physician, they feel that their physician understands where they are coming from, they perceive their care as better, actually.
Dr. Reibach, you'd want to add something.
Oh, no, I agree. I think Megan summed it up really well.
Yeah.
I think that relationship is important, but I also think that physicians could do a better job at putting their own bias aside, mm-hmm. even if they don't have the same views as their patients.
Yeah.
And sometimes that might take the patient initiating some of those discussions, or I think it's never good to assume anything. So even if your doctor doesn't bring it up, it's okay for you to bring up some of these issues with a trusted medical provider.
Excellent. Gary in Maryland, welcome to A Visit to the Pastor's Study.
Thank you.
What's on your mind today, Gary?
A number of years ago, my wife and I did a medical healthcare power of attorney, naming the other as the decision maker in the event of incapacity.
Okay.
And within that, we put a statement of basically food and hydration is always authorized. When we first did this, Harry Schiavo was in the news, and basically there was a major family disagreement between her husband and her parents. And
we were disbelieve it or not, before the program, Dr. Gaffey and I were discussing that specific situation, Gary. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So this bore on the way you and your wife resolved the issue, correct?
Right.
And did you, I don't know if you have children in the picture or other relatives, was it just you and your wife who made this decision, or did you draw your children, if you have them, into that?
Our daughter was perhaps in her late teens in high school at the time, and we probably discussed it with her.
Okay.
Certainly aware of the existence of the directives and the intent.
So your specific question, Gary, are you wanting to know about whether that food and hydration standard is a good one?
Yes.
That's one of the things we'd plan to discuss. Gary, thanks so much for the call. I'll let Dr. Gaffey, you seem ready to go with this one.
I'd like to start by commending you for doing that with your wife, because in our culture, we have such a sterile view of death. We don't expose ourselves to it generally with family members. It's very different than it used to be in the past, and so a lot of people do not ever address those issues, and it leaves family at the time of the decision making towards the end of their loved one's lives in a quandary very often, and it leaves the physician in the quandary because family members can't agree on what a patient would want for himself or her for herself. So the food and hydration is. It is a very, in my opinion, after all the cases that I've seen, it is a very case-specific question, because you can continue to provide external nutrition and hydration while all of the other organs are shutting down to the point where you can provide nutrition to a stomach and to an intestinal system that is no longer able to process it, and that is, I think, I think that might come from the idea that towards a patient's end of life, if they don't have food or hydration or a nutritional substance or hydration, that there will be increased level of suffering, because there is this idea that someone will be starving and feeling that starvation or becoming so dehydrated that they feel that. So it's more, in my mind, a question of a level of comfort that you want to provide your loved one or yourself in the end. What is the level of comfort? And if a patient has come to the point where they no longer perceive that a benefit from those interventions, then it almost becomes a moot point. And I don't know if what Michaela.
So like Dr. Ibox, mm-hmm. So if you're going to use the food hydration standard, which was also the one we learned in seminary, mm-hmm. but having to deal with a situation. In the pastorate, I realize that sometimes that isn't that helpful. It would be food and hydration so long as it really is preserving life and not prolonging death.
Right.
Correct?
Okay. Right. That's why I'm saying personally, I'm saying that it is a case-by-case basis. I don't know what Michaela has
Dr. Ibach.
Yeah, I look at artificially or medically administered nutrition and hydration as any other medical intervention. Mm-hmm. So who gets to decide, right, the patient themselves or a family member who knows them and a decision that they would make in that situation, and what's the goal? Medically administering nutrition, is it going to prolong a life that patient would want, a quality of life that patient would want? So for me personally, there are situations where I would say, depending on my neurocognitive abilities, if I had an injury, that I would want that the medically administered nutrition. But there are other cases when I wouldn't.
Okay.
So I look at it within the rubric or the context of sort of the other questions that we've already asked. And I do see it as a medical intervention.
Yeah, it preserving life or prolonging death. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the kind of thing family members need to talk frankly mm-hmm. with their medical people about. And this, just so the listeners realize, these are called advanced directives regarding intervention, mm-hmm. correct?
Yes.
And those are things people should discuss first with their physician.
If they want the physician, they should definitely discuss it with a physician. I don't know if that's the first step. I think doing a little research and speaking with your family members about it and then coming to your physician with questions is a good idea.
Okay. Dr. Ibach, you agree we're talking about advanced directives regarding intervention. Sure. Yeah, start yourself with your own research and talk with family members. Mm-hmm. Very important Those of you who have children, that you draw your children in so they are all together. Because I imagine you ladies, or within your community, you see what can be pretty serious divisions within family members.
Yes, I've seen that multiple times. Yeah.
Phone number, today we're dealing on Visit to the Pastor's Study. We're dealing with end-of-life issues. My guest, Dr. Megan Gaffey and Dr. Michaela Ibach, fascinating time. Please, if you're going to call in or text your question, do it now. To call in, 631-955-5400. Or if you want to text your question, 516-367-0391. Just real quickly, so you know where we're coming from, Visit to the Pastor's Study is a program that is brought to you by churches in the southern Connecticut and metropolitan New York area, congregations of the Orthodox Presbyterian Church. And for those of you in the listening area, we have congregations in East Haddam, Connecticut, and in Hamden, Connecticut, Mount Vernon, New York, Fresh Meadows, Queens, and here on Long Island in Franklin Square and Syosset in Bohemia. I invite you to go to A Visit to the Pastor's Study. You can just put all that in one word, avisittothepastorsstudy.org, and you'll get the archives of programs that increasingly are just being used to help equip the saints for the works of service and help pastors in their labors. That's why we call it A Visit to the Pastor's Study. And I'd love to have you like us on Facebook. We're getting quite a Facebook constituency at A Visit to the Pastor's Study. So you can visit the Pastor's Study on Facebook. But any questions, comments, or whatever, you can get them there. The time is running by, and I should probably, Dr. Gaffey, ask this, and then Dr. Ibach. Give us some of those basic things we should consider, as we face end-of-life issues for ourselves or for our loved ones.
I'd like to just start by saying that death is a result of sin, but it is not sin. And death and dying are not sinful. I sometimes Christians and Christian families are very reticent to let loved ones go in these situations because there is this idea of a chance for a miracle. Michaela and I have discussed this, and what we when it comes to medical technology and medical interventions and the use of these, God doesn't need any of those technologies in order to perform a miracle. So we do not, as a physician, when I'm counseling a family, I cannot say there will never be a miracle. I can't say that. But I can say that looking at this patient as a whole, looking at everything I know in my expertise, I believe at this point that I cannot help this patient and any more interventions will hurt this patient.
Yeah, the language I would use as a pastor dealing with people, and I always would try to work as closely as I could with the doctors, and pastors, please don't take the view that there's going to be a necessary conflict with you and the medical community. When the family gives you permission to work with them, I've always found that to be helpful. My language would be, as best as we can see things, mm-hmm. it seems that the end of your earthly pilgrimage is coming. And then, of course, you tell people talk with them about what's necessary to set their house in order. Did you want to add something?
Well, I would agree with you because death is coming for all of us unless Jesus returns before that. And so it is when you're – what are the most basic things? Know for yourself what you would want. Begin to articulate it to the people around you. And understand that you have the choice to decline interventions. And it is not sinful to do that. It is not wrong to do that. You're not giving up, I should say. You are not giving up. You are allowing death to come, and you have the right, the autonomy, to choose how you would want a natural death.
Yeah, it's a story that I read from Dr. Tukilo's, mm-hmm. Kutilo's book, Pursuing Health in mm-hmm. an Anxious Age. Is that Dr. Ibach, did you want to add something?
Yeah, I echo everything that Megan has already said. I mean, God is sovereign. He's given us medicine as a gift to be used for his glory. And I think that we need to remember that whether we're taking an aspirin in the morning or whether it's deciding whether or not to use a ventilator. And I think that Christians can
use their death as a witness to their doctors, just like that story you read. And I think that all too often it becomes this thing of conflict instead of a place of hope for Christians to be able to show non-Christian doctors that Jesus really is our only hope in life and death.
And he really did conquer death, and we have real eternal life. Exactly, exactly right. Thanks, Dr. Reibach. Mm-hmm. We have a call from Gene. Gene, we don't have a lot of time, but welcome to a visit to the pastor's study.
Yes, I'm listening to your program, and you know, we know that the devil is very strong and powerful. You know, he gets us in traps, and I'm suffering from depression, and I'm in a new apartment here, and I have a neighbor that he keeps on, you know, he thinks it's funny, and he persecutes me, like, behind the walls, and I really, I don't know what to do. I'm just holding on. God.
Gene, let me suggest you might want to email me, visitpastorbill@gmail.com. That's all one word.
I don't have a computer.
Oh, that's not going to help. Then Gene, get yourself a good, faithful pastor at a church that believes the Bible and will focus on the gospel, and he can give help to you. But hopefully you'll get that help, Gene. Sounds like that would be a value to you. Hey, real quickly, we don't have a lot of time left. Maybe being with Dr. Gaffey. From a medical standpoint, what are the most important things all of us, Christians and non-Christians, should keep in mind regarding end-of-life issues?
I guess this is a little bit of what I said before. As Christians, this world's not our home. And after we pass through death, we look forward to eternal glory in heaven. So God has given us this life. We're stewards of this life. But when it's over, it's not wrong to let it go. If you are in the situation where you've made these decisions for yourself and you've expressed it to your family, you need to trust that your family will follow your wishes. But if you're in the situation where your loved one is the one dying and the decisions are left up to you, I think after time has gone by and medical professionals are speaking with you and not rushing you, because that's not our goal, but expressing to you that further treatment will do you or your loved one more harm than good, then I encourage you to take what they say into consideration. We encourage patients to do their own research if you want to know more. I would say be careful what you read on the internet, because you can find many eyewitness accounts of this is a very crude example, but you can find eyewitness accounts of aliens. You can find Scientology patients who have claimed to cure themselves of terminal cancer using their mind. So you need to be very careful.
Know
what
the
you
sources
read.
Yes. When you use the internet, folks. Know the sources that are there.
Yes. Yeah, so and then look at that. Speak with your healthcare professional and ask yourself, what your loved one would have wanted, what kind of a life did he or she lead, what would you want for yourself, and how often were you in agreement on these issues when that person was conscious and speaking with you. So how much pain would you want yourself or your loved one to endure?
Yeah. Excellent. Dr. Reibach, just a few seconds. You got a cream of what you'd give us for your most important thing we should consider?
The goal is to glorify God, honestly. We can use medicine to that end. And like Dr. Gaffey said, talk about it with your family members, with your doctors, but in the end, rest in the gospel.
Oh, beautiful, beautifully put. Hey, thank you so much. Well, we've come to the end of another busy visit to the pastor's study. My thanks to Drs. Megan Gaffey and Dr. Michaela Reibach for being with us today. If you want to email me, you're welcome to do that. Love to hear from you. One word, visit Pastor Bill, all one word, visitpastorbill@gmail.com. Visitpastorbill@gmail.com. Would love your questions. Remember, tomorrow's the Lord's Day. Be sure to set apart time to worship the Lord in a church that is faithful to the Word of God and that will bring the gospel to you. Remember, everyone needs a pastor. Lord, we pray especially for Christian doctors. We pray you'll give them wisdom in the work that they do for the glory of Christ. Amen.
You've been listening to A Visit to the Pastor's Study, a ministry of Reformation Metro New York. Our website is www.reformationmetrony.org. Again, that's www.reformationmetrony.org. For more information on the program, check out our website at www.visitthepastorsstudy.org. www.visitthepastorsstudy.org. That's www.visitthepastorsstudy.org. Listen in next week at 12 noon for another edition of A Visit to the Pastor's Study. Remember, everyone needs a pastor.